This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's on us. Let's get it.
It's 9 o'clock.
It's time for more 92.9 The Game Tonight as we get you caught up with all things Atlanta sports and beyond.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Tribble tonight, Sports Radio 929 The Game, and I'm with my my third favorite Polish guy behind Steve Bartkowski and Mike Krzyzewski. We got Tom Cherosky. You are Polish, right?
I will take that. Yes, I will take that. I am Polish. Good job.
Even though I always hated Duke, but I always kind of liked Coach K, because when I covered him back in the day, he was always, when I interviewed him several times, he was great. But I hated his players, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And guess what? Here's some news for a lot of you guys. You know who hated the white guys that played for Duke more than anybody? White guys. White guys who hate Duke.
Yeah.
Bobby Hurley, Christian Leitner, sneering at us.
Man.
That elitist sneer they gave us. All right. As for the Falcons, $11 million under the salary cap. You got the Kirk Cousins thing. There are some rumors out there that maybe there's a possibility for a trade. I doubt it, but anything's possible. It's the NFL. There's a link to the Jets, of course. Aaron Glenn probably wants to bring in a veteran quarterback before he brings in his draft pick quarterback and maybe usher him along. Kevin Stefanski up there in Cleveland has a relationship with Kirk Cousins, having coached him for a couple of years. And I think even Miami came into the picture as well. Because I think they're probably concerned overall about Tua's health long-term. I mean, that's oof.
But I mean, do you want one young injury-prone quarterback and backing him up as a older injury-prone quarterback?
But was he necessarily injury-prone? He had the Achilles, and he wasn't healthy last year, though.
That's
could that
true.
Have been an issue coming back from the Achilles? You kind of try to correct your body in some sort of way, and it kind of
hurt yourself this past season. Yeah,
I don't know. But Falcons, $11 million under the cap. So what can they do to free up space? You can restructure, and like I said, that's not a pay cut. You can just prorate the base salary into a signing bonus, or you can take the money and just kind of kick it down the road, but they still get paid ultimately. Or you could cut some guys, just flat out cut them, or make a trade. Okay, fine. Now, just these are some of the ones that are being bannered about from what I've read, because there's a lot of guys to be considered, but these are some of your frontline guys that could maybe give you more bang for your buck if you were to either restructure or cut, for that matter. Say if you decide to cut Grady Jarrett, 31 years old, coming off an ACL. I don't think he quite looked as good as he normally did last year. I think the ACL kind of aged him a little bit.
Yeah.
He could still – the couple of games I went to – I could see there wasn't quite what he used to be, but it would still flash here and there.
He'll be a really good piece for a contender that needs some sort
of rotational
help on the defensive line. That's where he'll probably end up.
And I tell you, as much as I hate to see him go, because I love Grady, I think it would warm my heart if he went somewhere and won a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I think he deserves it.
If he did,
I think he's been a wonderful soldier for this organization. And, you know, he had a chance to win a Super Bowl, didn't get a chance to. And it's always heartbreaking.
He played great in that Super Bowl, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, he did.
He was phenomenal.
And he
was
Tom
incredible.
Brady had a problem with him. They didn't like each other.
I think he had three sacks in that game. Yep. Brady Jarrett was a man on a mission that
night. He was. And he always played like that. You always got that from him. And it always broke my heart to see him at the end of a season, how crestfallen he was, because you know he gave every ounce of what he could possibly give to a team and an organization that I think in many ways failed him. It did. So say like if you decided to cut Grady Jarrett, Caleb McGarry, and David Onyemata, who had a good season his first year in that Ryan Nielsen defense last year, took a step back. He's on the north side of 30. Those three guys alone, that free up $38 million right there. So I don't know. Caleb McGarry is responsible for protecting Michael Penix's blind side. Did not do a terrible job. Very good run blocker. Regarded as kind of average. But if Michael Penix is your guy, is this the right route you would take with Caleb McGarry? That's where maybe the rumors are coming from, that maybe the Falcons draft an offensive lineman 15th overall. See, I don't know. I mean, this is what makes the NFL. They make it intentionally complicated like this because they want everybody.
Yeah.
What is this supposed to be? It's supposed to be an 8-8 league before we went to 70.
Yep.
And then, of course, you'll have a few teams. But the parity issue, and there's a lot of parity in the NFL. That's what they wanted. And that's why they make it difficult like this. Because, you know, you can't hold on to great players for too long for the most part. They end up going somewhere else. That's just the way it's constructed. Make some cuts. Restructure. Would you you could restructure, say, like Lindstrom, Jesse Bates, Jake Matthews. I saw this mentioned. Put those three together with a restructure. That could free up about $24 million right there.
Yeah.
So, and I think I'm pretty sure that Jake Matthews probably has one more contract left in him because there's been a lot of offensive linemen that played pretty well even over the age of 35. And I think Jake's only, what, 33?
Yeah, he's 33.
Yeah, it seems like he's been here for 17 years, all right? But he's been so solid and so good. You know, he was drafted sixth overall. You thought he'd be a perennial all-pro, this, that, and the other. But he's been very good. He's been very good. You hit on that draft pick. Maybe it wasn't necessarily what you thought he could ultimately be based on, you know, his family lineage and everything like that, but he's been quite good, and I don't think he's ever missed a start. He's not missed. Even when his wife had a baby, remember
yep.
they flew him quickly
yeah.
up there on
yeah.
On Arthur's plane to get to Charlotte in time for that game. Drew Dahlman's an issue. Rated as the fourth best center in the NFL. And the funny thing is, the way they got Drew Dahlman, Terry Fontenot, not known for trading back, but he traded back a few years ago. And as a result of that trading back, they were able to get Drew Dahlman. But he's going to have to get paid. And I think that should be a priority when you have your fourth-best center. But one thing that Terry Fontenot has done pretty well, and you have to give credit where credit's due, there is some pretty good depth on that offensive line.
Yes.
We have not been complaining about the offensive line for the last couple of years.
Yeah,
we haven't.
The offensive line has been pretty solid.
There's a lot of teams that wish they had the quality of an offensive line the Falcons do.
For sure. I think they are built more so to run protect than they are to pass protect, but I still think this offensive line, that is the one spot that you can give Terry Fontenot credit for, is that this offensive line is more than competent. You have one of the better offensive lines in the league. That group is set.
And you bring in Bergeron from Syracuse via Canada. He's been quite good.
Yep.
Been very good. I mean,
yep.
I mean, I've heard Mike Johnson say, and I think he would. I listen to guys that have played the game, playing in Alabama, went in and Natty there, played for the Falcons. He said, this is an offensive line that can get you to a Super Bowl. I'm not saying this team will go to the Super Bowl next year because of all of your issues on defense. Falcons regarded as one of the worst tackling teams last year, by the way, in the NFL. We saw that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a ton of issues on this team. A lot of people say you should go out and get a cornerback with your first-round pick to book in him with A.J. Terrell. But like I said, if you don't have a quality defensive line, it doesn't matter who you put back there. They'll be hung out to dry. You cannot cover a guy for 5-6 seconds if you're not getting any pressure on the quarterback. Now, granted, the sack numbers moved up. Certainly, you kind of binged on sacks for a few weeks, but you still saw a lot of issues on this defense. So,
I was doing research for another show, and I saw this stat. Do you know the Falcons have only had a season where they finished with over 40 sacks twice in the last 20 years?
Oh, yeah. I would not be surprised.
It happened in 2004, and then actually recently in 2023, they got to 42 or something like that, I think, or one of these seasons. Recently, one of these years, they got up there. But
the offense was so bad, it kind of overshadowed that. Kind of like this year, the offense is pretty good for the most part. Kirk Cousins struggles aside.
Mm-hmm.
You still saw what it could be. Yeah, it got lost in the shuffle because the other side of the ball was letting you down.
But only twice in the last 20 years they've cracked 40-plus sacks in a season.
All right, there are some edge rushers out there.
Yeah, there's some guys. There's
the target free agency. He's 33 years old, currently plays for the Chargers. Khalil Mack. I would have loved this 10 years ago.
I'll take him now. I still think I think Khalil
he's still
got
regarded,
some stuff.
Well, he's regarded the top free agent at his position.
Yeah,
so I think
he's still got some good years left in him.
What do you have? 6 sacks last year. Okay, for the Chargers. That's all right. Josh Sweat. Boy, we heard his name in the Super Bowl, didn't
we?
Several times. He played his butt off.
I argued he should have been Super Bowl MVP.
I know. What do you have? I think he had 2.5 sacks against the Chiefs. Yeah,
2.5 sacks.
But that whole D-line was just
whole
feasting.
D-line.
I think they're rotating in 9 different guys. They're all just feasting
on
that O-line.
They just, one after the other, we're just going to keep drafting defensive linemen and edge rushers and just good luck with the rotation.
How about Chase Young? Remember he was coming out of, Ohio State? He was supposed to be this generational player, right?
Was really good his rookie year.
Yep.
Got hurt and hasn't been the same since.
Yep. 25 years old, though. Played for, of course, the Saints last year. How many sacks do you have? 5.5 sacks. Had a forced fumble. 3 pass breakups. That tied for second most on the Saints, by the way. How about Joshua Uche with the Patriots? What is he, 26? And I can honestly say I haven't heard of him.
I've heard of Uche.
Haven't heard of him.
He's all right. He's solid. He's solid.
Didn't have the flashiest season last year.
No, he's not going to be a big splash play guy. But again, he's solid.
Well, it's just not going to be as financially daunting to sign
him,
right?
As well too.
Could he be a guy? But, you know, that whole thing about bringing a Patriots guy down here, I don't know. Or do you just stick with Lorenzo Carter? I don't know about that. So there's some guys to be gotten there, and this is a very deep draft when it comes to especially defensive players. It's deep on the D-line.
Yeah.
I think it's very deep safety and corner as well. I think fairly deep at linebacker also. So between that and the available free agents, maybe you can cobble together something pretty good. And either combination, go out and try to get your free agent up. Myles Garrett's not going to end up here. I don't see that happening.
Where does he end up?
I don't know. I think, Cleveland is steadfast. We ain't trading you. Mm-hmm. I think he's gonna moan and cry his way out of there eventually, and somebody's gonna get him. I don't know what we could possibly put together. How about, I love what people put online. They just act like, you know, it's such a no-brainer. Well, let's just trade him Kirk Cousins and Kyle Pitts in a draft pick. Well, you know, they have to want Kirk Cousins. Although Kirk Cousins has been linked, but I think you'd basically have to mortgage your first-round pick for the next 3 years to get a Myles Garrett, plus a Kirk Cousins and Kyle Pitts. So I don't know if that's going to necessarily work out, though. But I hope the Falcons bring back Drew Dahlman. But out of all these, they're going to have to figure it out. And Terry Fontenot, I mean, his job's on the line. I think Raheem Morris's job's on the line. If they don't get to the playoffs this year, we're going to have to see Raheem looking up at the scoreboard chewing gum somewhere else at some point. But I just hope that Terry Fontenot has the autonomy that he thinks he needs to have and what GM should have, because you hear about all the meddling rumors that go on with the Falcons between Rich McKay and even Arthur Blank as well. So, and the whole notion of, well, we're a very collaborative organization. No, the buck should stop with Terry Fontenot, and he should be open to input. The over-collaboration thing indicates to me that you've kind of maybe neutered or castrated your GM in the interest of a Rich McKay and Arthur Blank. I don't know. But see, when you're not very good, you don't get to the playoffs year after year after year, that's how this speculation starts to fester.
Yep.
So you bring it on yourself by not winning. So that's an issue.
Would you be interested in bringing Dante Fowler Jr. back here? He had a good season.
How old is he now?
He's 30 years old. Last year he had 10.5 sacks and 20 quarterback pressures.
Well, yeah. What is he, Jacksonville?
No, he was in Washington.
Was he at Jacksonville for a time?
He was drafted originally by Jacksonville.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right.
He's bounced around the league. That's he right, was here in Atlanta.
Yeah, I know
few
he was
years
for a
ago.
Little bit.
But just coming off the season that he had with Commanders, it seems like maybe he's figured some stuff out.
Maybe he's figured
out. Cool
how old is he
back?
Now?
30?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay. 30.
I say he's not too old.
No.
Coming off arguably the best season of his career.
And maybe that's financially feasible as well.
I mean, yeah, I don't think he's going to command too much.
Can we just get somebody? Can we just
would be nice.
Can we really just solidify that interior defensive line and the linebacking core, get a little more athletic there, get another cornerback with A.J. Terrell to go with that offense? The world's your oyster, my friend. All right, going to come back. We're going to get into some news and notes. Michael Jordan suing NASCAR. Good. I am all for litigation. Let's do it. Sports Radio, 99 Game. Welcome back. Tribble tonight. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. I am Rob Tribble. Yeah. Hawks back in action. Coming off the break tomorrow night. Pregame at 7. Tip at 7:30 with Steve Holman and Mike Conti right here on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game is the Borlando Magic come to town. And the Hawks nipping at their heels. About, 26 games left. 16 will be home. And the rest of them, more games at home than away for the Hawks. They try to get out of the play-in, which is something it seems like it's been lather, rinse, repeat with them for some time. And how about this? Last year, of course, Atlanta United, they were struggling so badly, I did not even think about them for months and months and months. And then all of a sudden, that magical Saturday, final Saturday of the regular season, I believe they had a 10% chance of making the playoffs. Well, they won, and all the other dominoes fell in their favor. They get into the playoffs. They go on a run. They take care of Montreal. They take care of Messi in Miami. Then finally, it all ends in Orlando. Well, the season opener, Saturday against Montreal at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And what time is that game on Saturday? That's going to be a 7:30 kick, 6:30 pregame show. Miguel Almirón is back. Miggy is back. Even at the age of 30, and I was talking to Jason Longshore about it yesterday when he was on with Sam Crenshaw. He says, oh, yeah, he's still got plenty left in the tank. Yes, he is 30, but he's going to be quite the difference maker. And, of course, Andy and Randy had Brad Guzan on today as well. So hopefully Miggy can add some much-needed – well, he has added some much-needed excitement. Did you see when he came into town – when he arrived in town, I bet he had no idea he'd get the reception. There's probably 100 people there waiting to greet him when he got off the plane. He was probably blown away by that.
I'm sure he was I think he probably may have expected it a little bit, but I'm sure he was blown away. Whenever you get that kind of reception, it's always nice. But he talked about that before, about like how when he was here, how he felt a really strong connection to the city. And
oh, yeah.
He really felt like Atlanta became a home to him. So I don't think he was surprised to get the support, but I do think it was dope for him to see
absolutely,
that many
man.
People excited about his arrival.
All right, Michael Jordan had a lawsuit against NASCAR. I don't necessarily understand the whole thing. So they began the season as unchartered members as their antitrust lawsuit against NASCAR plays out in court. Last year, the teams were the only two not to sign NASCAR's new charter agreement, instead suing the sanctioning body, arguing for a larger share of annual revenue distribution. 23 XI Racing driver Tyler Reddick was one of the four drivers to make it to the NASCAR Cup Series championship race last season. Of course, Joey Logano ultimately won that. So they're suing each other. I don't know. I thought it'd be sexier than it was. I saw the headline, but I don't know what it means. But I wonder how passionate Michael Jordan is about NASCAR, though. Well, he's involved in it. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's more a money move for him.
Yeah,
at
but
that
it
point,
seems like he's into it, though. He's down there in the pits and everything else. Because you remember Brad Daugherty, great, really good basketball player, played for North Carolina, played with the Cleveland Cavaliers back when Mark Price was there. I mean, he loved NASCAR. He was an old gearhead as well. So, you know, of course it could be a money-making venture as well, certainly. All right, there's been a theft ring going around in sports. Joe Burrow was hit by it. Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes. It's like this. This is a well-organized group of thieves, and they kind of know when players are out of town, and somehow they're able to usurp the security system, and they always end up getting away with a few a few hundred thousand dollars in jewelry. Well, Olivier Giroud of LAFC lost about $500,000 in a burglary as well. This is a ring. This is a little gang of thieves, so to speak. Very sophisticated, I might say.
I saw. I can't remember if it was the NFL, but they put out kind of a notice to their players that, like, hey, we have been notified by police enforcement and stuff like that. Like, there are groups of people who are finding out the addresses of players and stuff like that, and breaking in and stealing valuables.
And that's been happening a lot. So that's kind of a sad thing. Braves start Grapefruit League play on Saturday as they try to get everything figured out. Of course, you know, hearing from Brian Snicker the other day, he was asked how much longer does he want to do this, and he basically said, I'm feeling good. I'm taking it 1 year at a time. We're talking about the fact last year it seemed like it would have been enough for him to just want to go off into the sunset.
Yeah.
You lose all your great players for a couple of months at a time, Ronald Acuna for the entire season. Michael Harris goes down for a prolonged period. Ozzie Albies does. Austin Riley gets hit on the hand as well.
Spencer Strider, of course, went down.
Sean Murphy, your catcher, missed 72 games. And I, the one thing he said, the one that really almost just made me realize it's just not our year, is when Austin Riley got hit in the hand and had to miss the playoffs. Then your Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, he misses the playoffs with a back injury. So Chris Sale, hopefully he'll be healthy and ready to go. And the latest on Spencer Strider is going to pitch a spring training game, and if all goes well, probably last week of April. As for Ronald Acuna, though, here's the situation. After his first ACL injury a few years ago, may have come back too soon, was not comfortable for most of the year. And you noticed it in the outfield. He played very tentatively. He would not be really overly aggressive with fly balls, not because he wasn't hustling or anything like that, because he wasn't comfortable. He didn't feel confident in his knee. You know, it was psychological as well. Looked great running bases, though, just running straight to first base. That was all good. Hopefully that's not going to be an issue. But I wonder what the long-term effects are going to be. You always hear about arthritis and stuff like that. You're going to be a step slow. He's going to be a four-tool player now instead of a five-tool player. So I think now in the latest Major League Baseball player rankings, he's at like number 16.
Yeah, they had him ranked 16.
Who they have at number one, Ohtani?
Oh, I would assume so.
I would assume it's Shohei Ohtani.
I would assume.
And that's absurd. And I guess he's going to pitch this year, too.
Hey, I mean, if he can do it.
I don't think people appreciate it. I know everybody clowns him because of the fact that his assistant was kind of taking his money.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that there's no way he wouldn't have an idea, but I've heard from people around him that he's kind of very immature, naive, all these other things, awestruck. I think it's very possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope that's the case. So I don't know, but at any rate, though, we are witnessing the most talented baseball player in the history. I love when people try to bring up Babe Ruth. About Babe Ruth was throwing 80 miles an hour.
Yeah, it is not the same thing.
Way back in the day, Walter Johnson was regarded as like the hardest throw. He was probably throwing 84. They did some very crude measurements. They took into a rifle range on a military base, and they used like these copper wires and some other attachments to kind of gauge how hard he was throwing. And back then, they didn't really have miles per hour. It was like, he's throwing 122 feet a second. Well, that came out to 83.4. I threw harder than Walter Johnson when I was in college. I threw about 87.
All right, then.
So I could have been.
You could have been.
I could have been a contender.
You could have been it.
I would have been the dude. Lefty, too. You kidding me? You know, I could have been in the 42 movie. Remember the one about Jackie Robinson that was filmed here in Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
I auditioned for that. They called me back twice as a pitcher.
Oh, okay.
As a pitcher, because I looked like one of the guys that was on the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Okay, got you. Yeah,
but the thing
is,
though, being 6'3", nobody was 6'3" back then. All the players were about 5'9", 5'10".
Yeah, exactly. You stood out like a sore thumb.
And the part I auditioned for, I thought it'd be kind of an extra, but I actually auditioned for a speaking role. And I saw the guy that got the speaking role. I'm like, come on, man.
Really? I could have
almost
that.
Had. Almost could have been
that.
A contender. Almost could have been in that movie. And Harrison Ford playing, was it Kennesaw Mountain? Who was a commissioner then? It wasn't Kennesaw Mountain. Oh, good Lord. Not Kennesaw Mountain. Oh, good Lord. Why am I so bad with names today? Commissioner with Jackie Robinson. What's his damn name?
Branch Rickey.
Brent, thank you. Good Lord. Kennesaw Mountain Land. It's like 1919. I really sound like an old man now. Oh, jeez.
While we're on headlines here, I saw something that I'm a little interested in. It's just me because I like poker. Do you know who Phil Hellmuth is?
Why do I know the name Phil Hellmuth?
Because
he's not only known for poker, is he?
So he's known for poker, but it's because he's won the World Series of Poker like 17 times.
Okay, there you go. So he transcended his sport.
Yes.
That's why he sounded vaguely familiar to me.
Yes. So Phil is now 60 years old.
Yeah.
He will not be participating in the World Series of Poker tournament this year.
Why not?
And the reason why is because he has said that it has become an endurance contest. Basically with that main event level. Basically, for those of you that don't know, the main event for the World Series of Poker is played over the course of like a few days, actually, I think.
Oh, yeah?
It's like 10 days. So it's this year, the first day, day one is on July 2nd. The final table will be on July 16th.
Hmm.
So the issue that he and a lot of older players in the circuit currently are having is that the levels are 2 hours, and you go through 6 levels each day. So
that's
you're 12
doing
12-hour days.
That's kind of grueling.
For like 7 days in a row, basically.
What's his lifetime prize money he's won, then? What do you think it is?
Ooh, I believe his net worth is at like hold on, let me see. 1 second.
And I wonder, here's a question for you, too. I think in professional poker, you should not be allowed to wear sunglasses. What about your poker
you
face?
Yeah, it gives you too much of an advantage. I'm not mad at that.
Poker face. Has there anybody ever complained about that?
Not that I know of. Phil Hellmuth's net worth is estimated to be around $28 million.
Well, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, man. I think Gabe Kaplan, who was a star of Welcome Back, Kotter with the Sweat Hogs and John Travolta,
mm-hmm.
He was a professional gambler after his acting career ended. So
that's fun.
You probably never even heard of him, but I'm just saying old guys out there have heard of him.
Okay. No, I haven't heard of him, but like whenever I see stuff, like I always just think of like the movie Rounders and stuff like that. And I was like, oh God, that's gotta be like Rounders. One of my favorite movies.
You know, I don't even know how to play poker.
Really?
Isn't that ridiculous?
Oh my goodness.
I've never even played.
I love me some good Texas.
And I'm not saying I would never want to play. I just, for whatever reason, I just never played.
Never got around to it.
And I had buddies that played. I just, for whatever reason, I just didn't do it. And that it's almost embarrassing to say I don't know how to play poker. Now I've played a few hands here and there with guys guide me through stuff.
Yeah, but you
it
haven't
just never
just, yeah.
it didn't the bug didn't really catch me. But I get it.
Yeah.
I get why people, especially you know, $28 million later.
Absolutely.
I can understand the appeal certainly. All right, we're going to come back. It's kind of a sad day in history, actually, and this one I remember this vividly, and this one gentleman was one of the first big-time sports superstars I ever interviewed. I was scared to death. It was one of my first gigs in TV. I just started, and he was amazing. And we lost him on this date in 2001. We'll get into that next. It's Tribble Tonight, Sports Radio, 929 The Game. Welcome back. It's Tribble Tonight, Sports Radio, 929 The Game. We got one final segment to go. Got Dom back there handling everything as well, chiming in and keeping me company. Because sometimes the extrapolative nature of this medium can be daunting, my friend, even with a vast verbal arsenal that I have. All right, do a little Rob's Rewind right here. Interesting day in history. Now, this first guy I'm going to talk about. So I started in TV about a little over, 25 years ago, local CBS affiliate. And I was a sports producer, then I became a reporter. One of the first things I ever had to do was go to Atlanta Motor Speedway to cover qualifying for the race. And this one gentleman I was up. I heard how he can be really salty with the media and grouchy, not very cooperative. But I had a chance to interview him, so I did. His name was Dale Earnhardt. He was amazing. And I just told him flat out, look, I just started in this business. I was a baseball player in college. You know, I appreciate NASCAR. And since I just told him that and I was honest, but I also did my research and asked him really good questions, talked to him for almost an hour. And he was a guy that would chew you up and spit you out. He was known as the Intimidator for a reason. Well, it was on this date back in 2001. I remember it vividly, too, because ironically enough, this was 2 days after I'd gotten laid off from that gig at the local CBS affiliate. Dale Earnhardt died at the Daytona 500. Collided head-on into the retaining wall. I don't know if you remember this or not.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
I mean, he's going between 155, 160 miles an hour. Skull fracture. His chin had basically struck the steering wheel, and it was awful. And up to the not real learned person like me, it looked like, well, he hit the wall and looked too bad. But
yeah.
Then you see one of the – I can't remember who was doing color on that. He goes, oh, my God, I hope Dale's okay. Then you – I think it was I can't remember who it was. It went up to his car and immediately just frantically was ushering the paramedics, but he knew he was already dead. And I'm sorry for not remembering who that was, but Dale Earnhardt passed away on this date back in 2001. How about this? On this date in 1978, the first Ironman triathlon in Hawaii took place. 2.4-mile swim. Why wasn't it a 2.5-mile swim? Why 2.4?
Yeah, why cut it off there?
Why bike 112 miles? Why not 110?
I don't 110 or 115.
And I know a marathon's 26.2. That's just the way that is, okay? So how did a triathlon start? Now, the first one in America that kind of really defined the whole thing happened in San Diego. But triathlon started off as a debate between runners, swimmers, and cyclists over which were the fittest athletes. So, like, okay, let's do all three and see who prevails. I got a good buddy of mine, and most people that are triathlons, they are really good at one thing, maybe decent at one other thing. There's one thing that's their Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy, excellent swimmer. Very good cyclist, terrible runner. But he grinds through it, though. But there's always that something, so that's kind of an evening out.
You know what's funny? That's exactly how I am. I would say I'm a very good swimmer. I'm good on a bike. I cannot stand just running for exercise.
Do you do triathlons?
No. But like when I was in high school and stuff, I was a swimmer and I did.
I did as a swimmer in high school. What was your event in high school?
So I was our backup for our 50 freestyle. And
yeah, I swam the 50 free also.
Mm-hmm.
What was your best time?
Oh, my best time for a 50 free was 26.
Oh, okay.
26, I think.
I actually got to 23.2.
Ooh, okay.
But we had dudes that were No. I was I think it was like a 24.9, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What I can't remember who would have won a 50 free. What would the time have been? These were good swimmers back then. They weren't doing 19 seconds or anything like that.
Oh yeah. A good time. I mean, anything in low 20s is
I think I was
impressive.
Right around. I was not a 23. I think that might have been what was – but I was like 24. But I swam my best ever in that event because all the best guys in DeKalb County were in that event.
Yep.
So that kind of gave me – I didn't treat it like the NBA All-Star game where I was too cool to swim, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I competed, man.
Oh, yeah.
I competed with passion.
Yeah.
So you're a freestyle swimmer. So I did the 50 free and 100 free.
So I did 50. I was reserved for 50 free. I do our 500s.
I couldn't do that.
I did our 500s.
I could not. That's 20 laps. Yeah.
Yeah. I did our 500s. Those were always grueling.
Man.
and then I also I did our breaststroke events.
Ah. Mm. I had one of my closest friends growing up in Belvedere. He was a breaststroker. Went to Barcelona for the 92 Olympics. He was an alternate in the breaststroke. And he competed in the breaststroke, but he's an alternate on the relay team.
Yeah.
But since that relay team won a gold medal, he still got a gold medal.
Hey, man. That's all
that
matters.
And he was one of the first guys to wear the full-length kind of cat suit, bodysuit.
Oh, okay, yeah.
As a male. Yep, yeah. He was one of the first guys to do that, guy by the name of Hans Dersch.
Hey, listen, I gladly, I was reserve on our team that took bronze at state for our relay team my freshman
year. That
ain't
bad, brother. That ain't bad.
I tell people, hey, I was on that team. I got a bronze medal.
Do you still swim?
Not as much as I would like to.
See, I don't either because the water would put out my cigarette, so I can't. So I had to give something up, and it was going
to
be swimming.
Yeah, had to give up smoking or swimming.
That's cool that you're swimming. Yep, that was fun, man. I did enjoy swimming, though, but then I gave that up for basketball.
Not mad at it. I always tell people I love swimming. Swimming, yep, to me is the best workout in the world. It's literally
your entire body. You have some little hotties on the team, too?
What's that?
Did you have some little hotties on your team? Oh, yeah. I did, too.
Oh, yeah. That's
enough.
That's what made practice worth it. That
damn right.
That's what made practice worth it. We got to see all the girls in their swimsuits.
Absolutely. On this date back in 1990, Freddie Mercury made his final public appearance at the Brit Awards. Of course, he died of AIDS in 1991 at the age of 45. A band I never got to see. Never got to see them at all. And I think their last performance together was Live Aid in 85, unless they did something after that, some smaller things, but never got to see Queen. That was kind of a big regret because Freddie Mercury, I think, is the greatest frontman ever.
One of my...
The way he can just command. You've seen it. I know you saw... Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you saw, was it Rami Malek that played him?
Yep.
And he duplicated his performance at Live Aid in 85, every down to the T. And the way Freddie Mercury could command that audience, too.
He's one of the greatest vocalists of all time.
And that's why he never fixed his teeth. Because that his teeth kind of helped him hit another octave or something. There was something about his teeth. He refused to fix them because it would have affected his voice. All right, 1951. City College of New York used to be a basketball juggernaut way back in the 40s and 50s. The NIT used to be extremely prestigious. They won that a few times. They were on the national map, but on this date in 1951, three City College of New York basketball players and two pro gamblers, by the way, arrested in a game-fixing scandal that actually involved college teams across the country, 32 players, seven colleges, and they're arrested for fixing 86 games between 1947 and 1950, and then after that, City College of New York basketball basically went down to Division III, and I don't even know if they're even playing anymore. Mm. And I think there's one now going on. There's a big one, I think, with Arizona State years ago. I think there's actually one going on right now. So there's a lot of that. It's always going to be around. So what are you going to do? Let's see. Birthdays today. How about Andre Rommel? Gary, you might know him as Dr. Dre.
Mm-hmm.
60 years old today.
60.
I have had this past weekend has been such a harsh reminder of just how old I am. I watched the Saturday Night Live homecoming concert with all the former musical guests performed at Radio City Music Hall. That was the night before the 50th anniversary SNL special. Eddie Vedder looks old now. Pearl Jam's lead singer, he looks old now. Will Ferrell looks old. Yep. Everybody looks old, and Dr. Dre looks old too. Yeah. Well, he doesn't look old, but he's 60.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's a testament for Dr. Dre because I feel like in hip hop, especially, we don't get to see our legends get to be this old. So to see Dre at 60 is absolutely
him kind of discovering Eminem or helping Eminem along, that kind of put him back on the map, didn't it?
I mean, he helped NWA, Eminem, 50 Cent, the game. Like, he was a huge influence to a lot of people.
But see, after NWA, though, didn't he get a little dormant for a while? Then Eminem kind of helped him
emerge, Eminem,
and then he goes on to the other guys, right? You know how much money do you think he made when he sold his Beats Electronics to Apple back in 2014?
I remember seeing the number for that deal, and I can't remember it off the top of my head.
It starts with a B.
Oh.
$3 billion.
$3 billion. Oh,
$3 billion dollars, yes. Molly Ringwald. A lot of guys my age crushed on Molly Ringwald. She was in all the John Hughes movies. Of course, Breakfast Club, 16 Candles. I was more of an Ally Sheedy guy. She's 57 today. Matt Dillon, another famous dude from back then.
Yeah.
61, but apparently he's going to be playing, who was it? I saw this. Oh, good Lord. Who's he going to play? He's going to be playing Marlon Brando in a movie. He's 60. Matt Dillon, 61. Another thing that makes me feel extremely old. John Travolta, 71 years old today.
Oh, my God.
71. My hair. You touched my hair. Good Lord. Man. So, yep, the Dale Earnhardt thing, that was kind of sad, but that was like one of the most gratifying interviews I ever did because I just, I thought he would just, hey, get the hell away from me. Wasting my time. He hit me with his helmet or something. Oh, you see, he was fantastic and gracious and everything else. But, you know, it's like anything else. So, you know, you'll hear about a famous person or someone that's kind of a elite in their chosen profession. Oh, he's a jerk. Well, you could have just caught him on a bad day.
That's true.
You know, that's kind of an unfair thing a lot of times. But sometimes it also holds true, though. It's consistently everybody seems to agree that they are just...
That's the point. If you're hearing it from multiple people... Yeah.
Like
okay.
Ellen DeGeneres, multiple people.
Yes, multiple people have talked about her.
Yeah.
If you just hear it from one person, take it with a grain of salt. Because then maybe that person caught them on a bad day.
There you go. All right, we're going to tie a bow on this whole thing. I started the show by talking about what the NBA should do about the All-Star Game, since you have a bunch of guys who don't care. They make so much money, there's no financial incentive available to make them even care about it. They all arrive at in their own private jets. I say make it Team USA against Team World, and you play every other year in Europe with amongst those wild fans over there. If you haven't seen it, look online at European basketball fans. Those games are lit. Imagine, I don't know, the most exciting college football game to the third power. They're just nuts, singing and chanting. It's like European soccer games. And then bring the game over here. And I think if you do that, add some geopolitical angst to it, the electricity of that building, and they're the visiting team, get the home field advantage to the world team. I think that would ignite some competitive juices amongst the NBA players. And, of course, every other year, bring it back over here, rotating cities in the U.S. I think that might be a way to solve it. Or just go ahead and let the NBA All-Star Game, let them play flag football too. Let's just make them all play flag football.
Just make
football.
Them all.
Because the NHL, a brilliant stroke. I mean, they won the weekend. They won the weekend with their tournament, with the Four Nations tournament, especially with the angst between the U.S. and Canada. Three fights in the first 9 seconds, and they're going to meet again on Thursday night. I can't wait to see what the ratings will be for this. It's going to be a little bit better. It's not going to be a juggernaut rating, but it's probably going to be two or three times more than what you would normally expect. I mean, hockey is a bit of a niche sport. I used to love it, but I lost two hockey teams growing up here. I lost the Flames. Mm. I loved the Flames when I was little. They're actually a very good team, but Tom Cousins, the team's owner, had some financial issues. I think he had a bad lease at the Omni. He sold the Flames to Calgary, and just a few years later, of course, what do? They win the Stanley Cup. Could have been a championship we had in this town. Then we had the Atlanta Knights, the minor league hockey team that did win, the Turner Cup? I can't remember. In 96, they won that. And that was fun. And then we get the Atlanta Thrashers. But, you know, with the Atlanta Spirit Ownership Group, the Atlanta Thrashers were a non-core asset. They even admitted that. We're not up that big of a priority. They bought the Hawks and Thrashers, and then it was Phillips Arena because they wanted the Hawks in the arena. Didn't care about the Thrashers, and as a result, they wouldn't kind of feed the beast and bring in any really good players. And they had one playoff appearance with the Thrashers, and they got swept by the New York Rangers, and then they moved to Winnipeg. So I have lost two hockey teams, and that's why. And I don't know, have you heard any of the latest about the possibility of hockey coming back here? But it'd be way up there in Forsyth.
I feel like that was a big talking point last year.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it. I got to look into that.
Since.
I want to look into that because it just popped into my head.
Yeah.
But it'd be way up there in Forsyth of that big development they're doing up there.
Yeah.
But somebody like me, I would watch and I would love them, but I'd probably get up there once every other year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, probably not something I'm going to go out of my way to get.
It's not going to go out of my way, but if they're good, though, it'd be great.
I said it would be nice.
And I think Atlanta deserves another chance because hockey can work here. I mean, good Lord.
Listen, man.
Atlanta United worked here. You know why? Because they win. They did win.
If the Tampa Bay Lightning can win Stanley Cups in Florida.
In Florida. That's hilarious. I think hasn't Carolina won one as well?
Yeah.
Nashville was relevant.
Absolutely.
That just shows you another thing, how sports is so bizarre nowadays. You got number one, number two in college basketball, Alabama and Auburn played each other on Saturday. You got Southern hockey teams winning the Stanley Cup. It's bizarro world, man. It's crazy. So I guess we're done here. Dom, man, I really appreciate you. Good job. You're not back with me tomorrow. It's going to be Oren, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are you with me on Friday?
I am not, actually.
All right, brother. Well, we'll do it again because I'm doing several more of these this month. So
let's do it.
All right. Hawks back in action tomorrow night against Orlando as they try to make a push to get out of the play-in. That's going to be a 7:30 tip right here on Sports Radio 929 The Game. Good night, everybody.